Welcome to Stand in the Gap Today with Sam Rohr, Gary Dahl, and David Kistler of the American Pastors Network, addressing the most critical issues impacting our culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. Learn more about the work of the American Pastors Network at AmericanPastorsNetwork.net.
Well, how serious a threat is the Muslim Brotherhood to the security of America? The president, in his speech last night, talked about radical Islam. He didn't mention this word particularly, Muslim Brotherhood, but we are going to talk about that today. We're going to answer such questions as this. Do all imams in mosques, in the nearly 2,000 or whatever it is now mosque in America, do they preach and encourage militant jihad? You're going to want to call and text your friends right now, ladies and gentlemen. Join us for today's very timely Stand in the Gap Today as we feature a first-time guest to this program. He's Egyptian-born Mark Christian, formerly a devout Muslim, and he was an imam from the age of 12 to 23, and we're going to explain how that can be possible. His great-uncle was one of the two original founders of the Muslim Brotherhood, and we're going to talk with Mark in depth about these issues in segments 2, 3, and 4. And with that, I welcome you to Stand in the Gap Today. I'm Sam Rohr, and we'll be joined today by Gary Dahl. David Kistler is away from us in Europe, actually, as we are speaking and doing this program. Well, Gary, last night President Trump spoke to Congress, and by what all of the indications are, it was perhaps one of the most watched presidential addresses that we have seen. In my opinion, it was a powerful speech, and I want to get your comments, Gary, on this as we talk about this presentation and the response by various people to what the president said. But to help frame this discussion a little bit, I'm going to play just the last minute and a half of the president's address last night, because I think it tended to summarize the big picture of what he was saying in a great, great summary statement. So, Russ, if you could play that for us, please.
Members of Congress, I have the high privilege and the distinct honor of presenting to you the President of the United States.
Nope, that is not the, Mr. Producer, not the clip, not the clip. So we're going to go ahead with that. It was the, I wanted to get the very ending of the speech. Where he talked about the summary. Actually, Mr. Producer, I think was probably the marking 24 is what it was, perhaps. But that was my mistake with you. But Gary, you were listening to the speech last night, but the president at the end made a very clear statement. He talked about we're in a new time. He looked ahead to the 250th anniversary of the nation. And he talked about looking forward, not looking back, and not getting caught up on trivial arguments, but going beyond those things. I thought it was a superb, superb ending, Gary, but I think you probably had a lot of thoughts about it. What were your overall thoughts about watching and what the president said and perhaps even the way the audience there responded?
Well, I was very well pleased with the speech, and some of the statements that he gave included, "We unite in condemning hate and evil in all forms." He also said that, "I am coming to you with a message of unity and strength." I liked what he said when he said that America is once again ready to lead. And he followed that up by saying that we now have a new chapter of America greatness, which has begun. He said, "All that we need to do is to dream big, bold and daring." And of course, he went on to say that if we do that, we are going to see great things taking place. what did discourage me, Sam, is that even though President Trump really, in my perspective, had a lot of vision and perspective and really showed himself presidential. In fact, there were numerous people who have said that he became president last night. He showed himself presidential. What concerned me greatly was the way that some of the Democrats responded. You know, at one particular point, President Trump said that he is presenting to the Congress, the Senate, Judge Gorsuch, a judge who will defend the Constitution. None of them stood up out of respect of that, which really concerned me. As a matter of fact, it was Chuck Schumer who said in reference to Donald Trump's speech that this speech was detached from reality. Now, Sam, on one hand, I'm very, very pleased with the presentation that Donald Trump gave last night. Very presidential, on target, established leadership, laid the foundation. But what I see from the Democrats is that they want division. They are causing division, and it's serious in my mind. And I'll tell you what, for all those of you out there who are Democratic people, you might want to talk to your Democratic leaders and tell them to get a life and get on with the program. But Sam, to you, let me ask you the same question and get your overview of the president's address last night.
Well, Gary, in addition to what you said, I thought as I was listening to the presentation, these were some words that came to me: visionary, presidential, principled, because nearly every part that he said, as far as direction, he said, now let me give you the two or the three or the four underlying principles that will guide this change. Gary, he talked about the breadth of things. He was unifying. He clearly disagreed with the former president on the matters of Obamacare and so forth. But he was there, and it was in every regard consistent with what he had been saying during the campaign, which is why some people, you know, here's that even are not normally with him. Here's Piers Morgan. He not generally there. He said last night the real Donald Trump finally stood up. And here's this one is from Gail King of CBS News Morning. She said he said from the beginning he was going to speak from his heart, and I certainly think he did that. 83%, Gary, were Republicans who were watching. 83% were far more optimistic, according to CBS poll, after the speech than they were before. 24% of Democrats were more favorable. 76% of all of those who watched approved of what he said. 24% disapproved. I think last night, Gary, was a big evening. And I thought the other thing, and I don't know what you thought about this as well, but I thought that he was speaking to the American people.
Oh yes.
Don't you? Didn't you get that?
Oh, I thought he was too. He was looking beyond those who were in the chamber there and speaking to the American people and laying a foundation for the next 10 years, looking forward to the 250th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence, which is why I said he has set vision and he has charted the course. I was very well impressed.
Yeah, so was I, Gary. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's just our view, or our basic overview of what the president said. A lot more is coming out about what he said and the program as it is implemented. But we're going to shift gears now and go and focus on one thing he talked about. He talked about radical Islam. We're going to bring in and welcome a new guest to the program, Mark Christian, whose great uncle was a founder of the Muslim Brotherhood. We're going to talk about this and ask the question, are they enemy number one? Is the mother butter enemy number one?
Americans are a freedom-loving people. Wouldn't it be great if you could carry a copy of the essential documents that outline our freedoms written by our nation's founders in your pocket so you can refer to it every day? Well, now you can. Stand in the Gap Radio has found something you're sure to like, the Patriot's Essential Liberty Pocket Guide. The handy guide is a slim 6.5 by 3.5 inches, yet it includes the Declaration of Independence, the U.S. Constitution, the preamble to the Bill of Rights, and other influential documents, including, in the words of our founders, topical quotes from America's founders, plus a listing of online resources for further research by the serious-minded or the just plain curious. To see and request your copy of the Patriot's Essential Liberty Pocket Guide and make your tax-deductible gift of any amount, go to AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. That's AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. Let us hear from you today. Thank you, and God bless you.
Hello, this is Sam Rohr. Although the term Christian education doesn't occur in the Bible, it does speak of the moral and spiritual instruction of children. It places a high value on knowledge, both of God and His works. It describes the moral and spiritual fruits of this knowledge and defines its ultimate purpose, the growth of your child in godliness of character and action. That's why we suggest you consider BJU Press K-12 materials. Your child's a unique individual created for a specific purpose. Proper instruction that includes the Bible and the relational influence of godly teachers produces a pure heart and a willing mind. The Bible calls that success. BJU Press materials are well written, grade level appropriate, and biblically integrated. They teach critical thinking skills and keep your child engaged and excited about learning. If you're a Christian school teacher or administrator, a homeschool teacher, or a parent who just wants your child to learn more, start by exploring the BJU Press website. Visit BJUPress.com. That's BJUPress.com.
History was made on today's date. Stay tuned for an American Minute with Bill Federer.
Before the U.S. Constitution was written, what was the government in the United States? It was the Articles of Confederation, ratified this day, March 1, 1781. Signed by such statesmen as Benjamin Franklin and Roger Sherman, it was an attempt to loosely knit the 13 states together. The Articles of Confederation declared, "The states hereby enter into a league of friendship to assist each other against attacks made upon them on account of religion, sovereignty, and trade. It has pleased the great governor of the world to incline the hearts of the legislatures to ratify the said articles."
This has been an American Minute with Bill Federer. For a free transcript, call American Minute at 1-888-USA-WORD.
Kings or Parliament could not give the rights essential to happiness. We claim them from a higher source, from the King of Kings and Lord of all the earth. They are not annexed to us by parchments and seals. They are created in us by the decrees of Providence which establish the law of our nature. They are born with us, exist with us, and cannot be taken from us by any human power without taking our lives. A quote from John Dickinson, 1804.
Ladies plan to attend the Montgomery County Republican Women's Leadership School on Saturday, March 4th from 9 to noon. Topics will include campaign strategy, planning, fundraising, and more. If you are a candidate, thinking about becoming a candidate, or interested in helping with a campaign, a political vendor, or a consultant, this event is for you. Past attendees have successfully won elections. The meeting will be held at Whitpain Township Building, 960 Wentz Road, Bluebell. For more information, contact Nancy Becker at 267-481-0569.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. And now, let's rejoin Stand in the Gap Today.
Well, we're going to get right into this very, very important topic today, the Muslim Brotherhood, and we're going to do so by inviting in, for the first time, to Stand in the Gap today, Mark Christian. Again, he is born in Egypt, former devout Muslim, and he was an imam from the age of 12, yes, 12 to 23. His great uncle was actually the original founder of the Muslim Brotherhood, and his family's been involved there for a long time. He's now leading and the president of Global Faith Institute, and you could find that at globalfaith.org, and we'll repeat that a little bit later in the program. But with that, I'm going to welcome to the program Mark Christian. Mark, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you very much for having me. It's an honor to be on your show and to be among great people like yours.
Well, Mark, I tell you, you and I met each other again. Actually, we met each other a year or so ago. We talked at depth this last week at a meeting we were in Florida. And the more I talked with you, the more informed I became about the Muslim Brotherhood, Islam, and Sharia, even though on this program we do a lot of discussion and we have many guests on here because we believe that jihadist Islam is the greatest threat facing America today. But you are now a preacher, you speak across the country, and you are qualified to talk about this just because of your connection, perhaps more than anybody I've met. Let me just start here at the beginning, Mark. Tell us just briefly a little bit about your background. I already said you were born in Egypt, but fill that in a little bit. And your early connections with the Brotherhood, establish that if you could for our listeners.
Thank you very much. You know, the difference that maybe you have witnessed in our conversation is, you know, I did not read about Islam. I did not just educated myself about it. I, as a matter of fact, grew in the midst of it. I grew up, you know, teaching Sharia law, teaching Islam, and I was, you know, soaked into the Islamic culture, and I lived every aspect of it, whether it's a political or religious or cultural, and I lived through the shift of the rise of the Muslim Brotherhood from just a regular organization that is confined with the borders of Egypt to grow into a global movement and so forth. And there is many things that contributed to that and so forth. And, you know, we don't have much time to talk about it, but I would love to talk about that maybe in another time. But to go back to my background, I grew up in Cairo, Egypt, as I mentioned. I grew up in a very devout Muslim family. My great uncle was one of the co-founders. He was not a the founder. He was one of the co-founders. The founder of the Muslim Brotherhood, Hassan al-Banna, reached out to my great uncle, Muhammad Madbouli Abdelail, and together with another, group of few men, they founded the organization. And my great uncle was tasked to host meetings and also to reach out to others who sees that they have a big potential to be Muslim Brotherhood members and leaders and so forth. And he was a recruiter for the Muslim Brotherhood and a kind of an organizer for them during his life and, until he died in the mid-80s. So, you know, this is a kind of started a culture in my family to be part of the Muslim Brotherhood family in ways. And then later on, my own dad and my own uncle that I lived closely throughout my childhood, we lived in the same compound together next to my uncle and so forth. And those two people that has a big influence in my life happens to join the Muslim Brotherhood in their youth, in their teenage years. And they still till today, both of them, my uncle is a lawyer, my dad is a physician, and both of them are active members and of a big influence on the Muslim Brotherhood, not only in Egypt, but across the globe.
Wow. You know, that's this is Gary, by the way, Mark. And to me, it's very, very amazing that you were that closely aligned with the Muslim Brotherhood, and yet you've come out of Islam. And that's just an amazing thing to consider. But let me back up a little bit, if you don't mind.
Well, can I interrupt you for a second? When you look at the Lord, he does miracles, and he did miracle in my life beyond my own imagination. So,
amen.
Yeah.
It's all a part of his amazing grace. Amen?
Amen to that.
It is. But let's talk a little bit about the Muslim Brotherhood. With your close association, certainly you are an authority on this. Precisely why was the Muslim Brotherhood formed? And beyond that, what is their end game strategy for Europe and the United States of America today in 2017?
The Muslim Brotherhood is built for a prophecy of the founder of Islam, Muhammad, the so-called prophet of Islam, has prophesied that the Islamic State and the Kingdom of Allah will continue on earth from the day he started in 600 all the way till the end of times, and the flag of Islam will rise on every corner of earth. There is a gap that took place in 1924 where this prophecy came to an end with the demolish of the Islamic Empire and the fall of the Ottoman Empire. That disturbed many Muslims, disturbed many grassroots in the Islamic communities across the globe, in the Middle East and outside. And Hassan al-Banna, the Muslim Brotherhood founder, was mainly disturbed by this, and he took it on his shoulder to start a movement that will follow on the prophecy of the founder of Islam, Muhammad. And he started the Muslim Brotherhood for one premise, to resurrect the spirit of Islam in the hearts of Muslims and to reach out across so he can establish the Islamic State once again and to continue taking it till the end of times.
And so in reality, what you're saying is that the real reason why the Muslim Brotherhood was founded was, number one, to strengthen Islam and to spread Islam around the world. Is that the right interpretation of what you said?
Absolutely. And here is why I'm saying this, and because there is lots of illusion happening out there that the Muslim Brotherhood is coming with a new ideology. In fact, they are coming with the foundation of Islam itself. and following Muhammad, the founder of Islam. So if we are looking from a perspective of Christians, and I'm sorry for using this kind of analogy, but it's kind of a born-again Muslim movement that is resurrecting the real spirit of Islam, taking it to the roots of Islam so they can follow the prophecy of Muhammad. And why they look at it this perspective? Because in the eyes of Islam, Muhammad and Allah never wrong. So if there is a gap, if there is a roadblock happens to the Islamic empire and the Islamic or the kingdom of Allah on earth, it is not because Muhammad was wrong or Allah was wrong. It is because Muslims were wrong. And this was the message of Hassan al-Banna. He says, we need to resurrect the spirit of Islam in our heart and follow our founders and follow our prophet. And then we will be able to resurrect the Islamic empire again. It was not Allah or Muhammad that was wrong that we came to this defeat. It is because of us Muslims who did not follow Muhammad. And this is why we're defeated. So the answer is, resurrect the real spirit of Islam, then the prophecy of Muhammad and the promise of Allah will happen.
See, that, Mark, that's extraordinarily important, I think, for our listeners to know. So the Muslim Brotherhood, would I be correct in saying, are they're not the Al-Qaeda, they're not the face of ISIS, but they're probably suit and tie type individuals that are, how do they actually effectuate it? They infiltrate government, business. How are they actually furthering their ends?
I'm sorry to break it to you, but they are Al-Qaeda and ISIS and all those fundamental groups, because from the very beginning of the Muslim Brotherhood, they started a group where they lead the civilization jihad, the people who are lawyers and doctors and accountants and bankers, where they wear the suits and deceive people to believe that they are nothing other than common people in the community, but they are very faithful in their faith. That's it. And there is another wing of the Muslim Brotherhood started with the day the Muslim Brotherhood started. It's called the secret wing of the Muslim Brotherhood or the militant Muslim Brotherhood. And those are secret group from the very beginning. And they have a certain criteria to find the people that can fit into that secret group. And those are the people that founded Al-Qaeda and founded ISIS and founded everything. You will see a uniting force in all those groups, that all of them has been trained in a way or another in the Muslim Brotherhood or an offshoot of it. So you look at Osama bin Laden, has been recruited by Ayman al-Zawahiri in Egypt, who happens to be a doctor, and his dad was a friend of my dad. Ayman al-Zawahiri, the head of Al-Qaeda, he's a Muslim Brotherhood, went to the same medical school I went to, and he is a Muslim Brotherhood to the core. And he recruited Osama bin Laden in Saudi Arabia, and then together went to Afghanistan and founded the Maktab Khadamat, and later on became the Al-Qaeda. ISIS leader, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, a scholar in Sharia law and an imam who was trained in Egypt and in Cairo as a Muslim Brotherhood member, and he founded ISIS. The head of Al-Shabaab, the same thing. You go on down the list, and you'll find all of them associated with the Muslim Brotherhood. Again, all of those militant groups are not espousing a different ideology. It is the foundation of Islam. President Obama was absolutely and fundamentally wrong when he said ISIS is not Islamic, because it is Islamic to the core. They are not doing any action, any killing, any beheading, except backing it by a hadith or a saying of Muhammad or one of the traditions of Islam. To answer your question about... Go ahead.
Go ahead. I'm just going to follow up here in the last 30 seconds. Yesterday, I was in Florida. Lord Pearson, a member of the House of Lords of the UK, said a statement there. He said, quote, "The Muslim Brotherhood is enemy number one, and they must be destroyed now or we'll lose our nation and lose our freedom," end quote. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely, I agree 100%, except one point. When we look at a threat, we're looking at a kind of a bloody shed or some kind of an attack, you know, in a militant way. I agree that the Muslim Brotherhood is the biggest threat to the Western civilization and to our Christian foundation. And it is not only because of attacks and militant attacks, but also because of civilization jihad.
All right. Wow, Mark, you have imparted great wisdom and a lot of information here. Ladies and gentlemen, I hope you note this. You can get this entire program, standinthegapradio.com, and our archives. You're going to want to go and pick that up and listen to Mark Christian as we talk about this matter of the Muslim Brotherhood. When we come back, we're going to talk about imams and mosques here in the United States. What are the imams teaching? Where do they come from? Are they teaching jihad, death to Jews and Christians? Is it just one or two or all of them?
WFYL. Fox News Radio, I'm Chris Foster. 24 days since the Dow hit 20,000 for the first time, it's now up over 21,000.
The Dow, the Nasdaq, the S&P, the Russell, the Dow Transportation Index, all hitting record highs today. And what took us to this 21,000 mark from the 20,000 mark, which is about 5%. The top gainers since 20,000 in percentage terms, Apple, Johnson & Johnson, and Cisco Systems.
Fox's Nicole Petalides in New York. Right now, the Dow is up 325 points. The Senate confirms Montana Congressman Ryan Zinke as Interior Secretary.
Zinke pledged to oppose attempts to sell or transfer federal lands while allowing, in some cases, coal mining and oil and natural gas drilling. A separate vote has set up a final confirmation vote for former Republican presidential candidate Dr. Ben Carson to lead the Department of Housing and Urban Development.
Fox's Jared Halpern at the Capitol. Fox News. We report, you decide.
From the Pennsylvania Family Institute, I'm Michael Gere with today's Family Update. I'm in the midst of reading a new book called Gosnell, the story of America's most prolific serial killer. As you've probably guessed, it's about Dr. Kermit Gosnell, the West Philadelphia abortionist who's now serving a life sentence for the gruesome atrocities he committed against women and babies at his Philadelphia clinic. I know the story well, and we helped successfully pass legislation to try and prevent another such house of horrors from ever arising again. That's why I'm so disgusted with our current governor, Tom Wolf, who this past week stood just 2 miles from the site of Gosnell's former clinic and held a press conference where he denounced Senate Bill 3. That bill would stop all brutal dismemberment abortions and end all abortions after 20 weeks. The Gosnell book demonstrates how Governor Tom Ridge helped enable Gosnell, and under Tom Wolf's mindset, we would open the door to even more Gosnells. That's just terrible.
These are the times that try men's souls. The summer soldier and the sunshine patriot will, in this crisis, shrink from the service of their country. But he that stands it now deserves the love and thanks of man and woman. Tyranny, like hell, is not easily conquered. Yet we have this consolation with us, that the harder the conflict, the more glorious the triumph. Thomas Paine, The American Crisis, 1776.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. And now, let's rejoin Stand in the Gap Today.
We're going to continue in this segment with our special guest, Dr. Mark Christian of the Global Faith Institute. And you can reach him by going to globalfaith.org. That's their website, globalfaith.org. Former Egyptian, actually born in Egypt, former imam, and connected with the Muslim Brotherhood because of his great uncle and his father and his uncle. Most unique insight. Mark, I'm glad that you are with us today and you've taken time to share your insights on this most important subject with our listeners. In the last segment, I concluded by asking you, would you agree with a statement by Lord Pearson, a member of the House of Lords, who yesterday at our meeting I was in said that the Muslim Brotherhood represented enemy number one to West, and you clarified by saying to Christianity and Western republics as we would know it. But I want to move now, Mark, into a little bit deeper into this matter of Islamic thought. And you were saying that the Muslim Brotherhood's goal really is to encourage all of those who call themselves Muslims to actually be more like Muhammad would like them to be, goal being to establish a worldwide caliphate. But we have mosques and imams. that are in this country. They're all over. We see imams from time to time being interviewed on different news programs, and they appear to be very nice people and very peace-loving people. But I want to go down a little bit deeper on that and ask you this question. I want to ask you, first of all, if you could, just very short answers to very quick questions, and then you can expand a little bit. But let's go into this series, just a couple things here, Mark, if I could, quicker with you. In the U.S. alone, approximately how many mosques are there now in the United States? Do you know?
3,200.
3,200?
Yes. 85% of those.
Go ahead.
Sorry, you asked me for one answer, but I have to explain that since 9/11, 85% of the mosques that exist nowadays has been built since 9/11, and 80% of the mosques in America, the Muslim Brotherhood hold the deed to those mosques.
Wow. Okay, wasn't even going to go there. Muslim Brotherhood holds the deeds to most of those that are now 3,200. I only thought there was about 2,000, so that's significant. Okay, another question. Is every mosque led by an imam?
It has to be. It must be. Like every church is led by a pastor. If there is a transition time, there must be. But every mosque has to be led by a designated and imam.
Okay, another quick question then. Who primarily has been financing the construction of these 3,200 mosques across the country? Is it one country in particular? Where's the money come from?
I have to expand on that, so I'm sorry. But there is an organization by name of NAIT, North American Islamic Trust. This is a Muslim Brotherhood wing, and mainly they are the banking and the financing arm of the Muslim Brotherhood in America. They get lots of money to buy the land in different places in America so they can hold the deed of the mosque. And then they start a fundraising project into every mosque that they're about to build. They get some money out of Saudi Arabia, from Kuwait, from Qatar, from Muslims outside of America, and also from Muslims over here. But they always reach out to the far left, you know, the Democrats and the liberals, into the communities where they can get money from them to build a mosque and help to build a mosque. So they kind of have an extensive fundraising operation where they try to raise money as much as they can from locals, whether Muslims or non-Muslims, and then they reach out to finish the project by people from outside of America.
Okay, very good. All right, one more question, then I'm going to go to Gary and let him ask you more of an expanded question. One final thing here. In the end, in these 3,200 mosques, where there is an imam, and you're making a comparison, just as a church would have a pastor, a mosque has an imam, do these imams effectively or always of necessity, or do they teach the same thing? Are they teaching compliance to the Quran, to the compliance to Sharia, or are there a variance? I mean, can some be a moderate imam as an example? Can some be a more peaceful-loving imam? Or are they really pretty much singing off of the same sheet of music?
See, I have to expand in that a little bit. I'm sorry about that. But here is the thing. You know, we try to judge from our free-thinking, open-mind Christianity that we have pastors that they have different messages and different set of ways to preach to their churches. In Islam, it's completely different. You know, an imam, to preach, he has to follow the same rules and regulations. There is no one imam is a moderate. There is no such a thing as an American Islam and Saudi Arabia Islam. There is no mosque in Boston that preaches different. All mosques has to follow the same thing. They preach from the same Quran. They preach from the same hadith. The free thinking does not exist. The free thinking is condemned by Muhammad by the time of his death. Before he died, he said, whoever free think and try to adopt anything that I did not say or did not do is considered an apostate of Islam. And by that meaning, he's not supposed to be even a Muslim. So an imam cannot do anything that is opposing the Prophet and the founder of Islam.
This is good stuff, Mark. Certainly, we are delighted that you're on with us today, and I know that our listeners appreciate it, and we're all learning together, so thank you very, very much for being with us. But let me ask you a question that, if you wish, you can build out on a little bit more. In fact, I trust that you'll do that. When you say that all imams really teach the same thing, What is the reason for that? And I know you touched on that, but I'd like for you to build out on that a little bit more, if you don't mind. But beyond that, are they all trained in the same school? For example, is there some Islamic or Muslim Brotherhood credentialing for imams similar to ordinations that we have for pastors in the Christian faith? Talk to us about that, if you would, please.
Let's dissect that a little bit. So, number one, we all judge by our own life experience. And, you know, in a Judeo-Christian culture in America, we look at free thinking and so forth and as the norm. That is completely different in Islam. The free thinking does not exist in Islam. So you have to look at from the perspective that the founder of Islam, Muhammad, it is not the Pope of Rome. It is not the leader of a certain church. It is the founder of Islam said, nobody has the right to have a free thinking about anything. So every Muslim has to follow exactly what he said and what he did. Okay, so put this on the side. Number two is when you look at imams and the mosques in America, another misconception and misunderstanding that Islam has many, many kind of ways of practicing it. There is a peaceful Muslims and there is good Muslims and bad Muslims and all that kind of stuff. The reality is Islam does not have any kind of different denominations in it except two, which is Shiite Muslims and Sunni Muslims, okay? The majority of Muslims are Sunni. 85% to 90% of Muslims are Sunni. And the majority of mosques in America are Sunni mosques. And the Muslim Brotherhood is predominantly and absolutely nothing other than a Sunni Islamic organization. So when you are looking at imams who are leading the mosques in America, they get their degree not in anything other than Sharia law. An imam to be ordained has to get his degree in Sharia law because this is how he leads the mosque by organizing marriages and divorces and inheritance and answering questions about lifestyle and everything in life. He has to use Sharia law as his guide. This is why an imam to be an ordained in America has to have a degree in Sharia law. Okay, where does he get his degree? There is only two places on earth, and none of them happens to be in America, that they can give that stamp of somebody to be an official imam in any mosque anywhere, including America. And this is Al-Azhar University in Cairo, Egypt, or Umm Al-Qura University in Saudi Arabia. So every imam in America has to get his degree or a stamp of being ordained either from Cairo, Egypt, or from Saudi Arabia to be ordained as an imam in America.
See, that is remarkable, Mark. Now, that means, let me just take it a step further. What you're saying is all 3,200 mosques in the United States, most of which have been built since 9/11, most all of them are Sunni, which is Muslim Brotherhood, fully connected altogether. Those imams are credentialed by one of two places, one in Cairo, one in Saudi Arabia, and they are credentialed in Sharia, which means that is it possible then that there is any imam in any mosque in the United States that is not teaching those who attend those mosques to ultimately seek to impose Sharia and to do the full extent of jihad, meaning force Christians or Jews into submission or to kill them or to destroy the country? Because is that not what Sharia is all about? Are they all teaching it? Are they all teaching it, no matter where they are?
You are packing 15 questions in one statement. Thank you very much. But I will take the last one. I want to highlight something in the last part of your question. Does Sharia law condemn Jews and Christians and calling for jihad? Absolutely yes. Does every imam preaches Sharia law? Yes. Does he talk about jihad on a regular basis? No. And why I'm saying that? Because imams' job is to encourage Sharia in the lives of Muslims. What is Sharia? Because this is a misconception about what is Sharia law. Sharia law is Allah's law that He gave to the people to govern every aspect of their life, not all of it jihad. And I can follow up in the second segment.
All right, Mark, I think we're going to do that. I want to follow up and then we're going to go to some solutions here about how we as Americans, American Christians, how we work with these things, because these are some pretty challenging items before us. So, ladies and gentlemen, do stay with us. We'll be back with Mark Christian of Global Faith Institute, former Muslim. He's going to talk to us a little bit more about this aspect of Sharia and what the imams are teaching and how jihad fits into that instruction. We're going to find out more about that when we come back right after this.
Christian parents want their children to excel in spiritual growth and educational achievement. Both are essential for future success in an increasingly complex world full of moral and economic challenges. BJU Press Materials place great value on the knowledge of God in His works. They teach critical thinking skills your child will need to get along both now and in the future. BJU Press Materials are available for grades K to 12. From the earliest grades, they teach biblical Christianity as a system of God-revealed truths. BJU Press Materials are well written, grade level appropriate, and biblically integrated. Teachers' editions assure that instructors have the plans and extra tools to keep your child engaged and excited about learning by teaching your child how to analyze, evaluate, and ultimately create new solutions. And that's just what today's workplace is looking for. If you're a Christian school teacher or administrator, a homeschool teacher, or a parent who just wants your child to learn more, start by exploring the BJU Press website. Visit bjupress.com. That's bjupress.com.
I'm sitting here right now looking at the beautiful, full-color Founders Bible. In addition to the trustworthy New American Standard text, it contains original historical artwork, as well as 64 full-color insert pages, 150 biographies or insightful quotes from the founders, and 450 pages of embedded commentary highlighting biblical insights. This beautiful leather-bound volume produced by historian David Barton has a gold-embossed APN logo on the front. It can be yours this month as you support APN with a gift of $250 or more. To see it and make your gift, go to AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. That's AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. If you can't send $250 right now, we'd still like to hear from you. In gratitude for a gift of any amount, we'll send you a wonderful audio CD by Sam Rohr entitled God's Plan for a Blessed Nation. It will bless and challenge you. Let us hear from you today. Remember, all gifts to APN are tax deductible. Thank you, and God bless you.
Up next, Dr. Carol Swain with 2 minutes to think about it. From high school dropout and teenage mother to esteemed Vanderbilt University political science and law professor, Carol examines the religious significance of today's most pressing issues and courageously exposes the cultural forces that threaten our cherished values and principles.
Hello, folks. Well, just when you thought you had heard it all in the world of politics, along comes the witches' lobby, or whichever you want to call them. Just make sure you take them seriously. A number of news services are reporting that the witch community is asking its practitioners to perform a monthly binding ritual until President Trump is removed from office. A representative of the witches' community told the Huffington Post that he considers their move as, quote, self-defense. So are we going to see the president resign amid scandal, impeachment, or some other incredible, unforeseen event thanks to efforts of the witches? Well, that spokesman, Michael M. Hughes, seems to be giving himself and his organization some occultic wiggle room. Quote, if people feel more empowered and less beaten down, that's valid. As I said in the beginning, we should not laugh at the efforts of these people. As Christian believers, it should be a lesson. These folks believe what they practice. Do we? If we believe true power and authority lie in the hands of God only, we should be praying for the president, not with trepidation, but with joy and great expectations, just as one prophet of God, Elijah, had victory over all the prophets of Baal. Christ will be victorious over all the powers of darkness, no matter what forms it might take.
Learn more about Dr. Carol Swain at BeThePeopleTV.com, CarolMSwain.net, and on Facebook at Professor Carol M. Swain, Ph.D.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website. AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. And now, let's rejoin Stand in the Gap Today.
Mark, I'd like you to pick up right now and further flesh out what you were saying about what the imams are teaching in the mosques relative to jihad, relative to Sharia. Take and build that out for us a little bit. I think we need clarification on this.
Absolutely. So there is a misconception about Sharia law and the Muslim Brotherhood in America. So before I go into about what the Imam is doing, you know, the Muslim Brotherhood organization does not exist by the same name in America when I mentioned about them owning and stuff. They have front groups. They have different organizations that they build in America. They are almost all of them 501c3. They are accepting donations and so forth. So when you look at Muslim Brotherhood, you're not going to find the Muslim Brotherhood per se. And this is part of the solution that maybe we can talk about in a little bit. But if you want to find out who is the Muslim Brotherhood in America, you cannot look any further than CARE, Council of American Islamic Relationship, a Muslim Brotherhood to the core. Islamic Society of North America, which is another Muslim Brotherhood in America, and also MSA, Muslim Student Association, and then the top of those all is NAIT, North American Islamic Trust, which is the kind of the money, you know, machine of the Muslim Brotherhood, and they are very well tasked and divided the operations between all of them to do different things and so forth, and I can explain that later if you want me. Talking about Sharia law, there is lots of misconception also about Sharia law in America. People don't, you know, we are using Sharia law and the word radical Islam as ways to tell people what is the real threat. Well, the word radical Islam, I don't agree with it so much, not because of that is not Islamic. As a matter of fact, I look at the problem, not radical Islam, but political Islam. Political Islam is the majority of Islamic doctrine that is teaches, you know, killing the infidels and fighting jihad and building Allah's kingdom on earth and so forth. And this is the real threat to America. And the word radical even does not mean anything, because radical means you are very devout. And yes, they are devout Muslims. So it's not, they are not like an offshoot of Islam. They are the main stream of Muslims, but they are taking the political Islam, part of Islam, which is the majority of Islam, and following the example of Muhammad in furthering the political Islamic agenda, to, you know, very seriously. Sharia law is the way of Muslims they're supposed to live their life. Why? Because Sharia means, you know, the path or so forth. It is basically the set of rules and regulations that govern every aspect of human life. And it mainly by Muslims. And it is supposed to be given to Muhammad by Allah himself. So the law of Islam is not built by scholars or imams or some kind of leaders. It has been given to Muhammad by Allah himself. This is why when you ask a Muslim, do you agree with Sharia law or not? They will tell you yes, because if they say no, this means that they don't agree with their own God, and this means that they are not really Muslims. So Sharia law is the core of Islam. It governs every aspect of human life. Some of it, you know, whether we like it or not, is already applied in America. For example, if somebody gets married or divorced or die or even wants to, you know, fast or how to pray or whatever they do as a Muslim, all of that is governed by Sharia law. Sharia law governs every aspect. It's even governed the way that people are supposed to have sexual intercourse, how they eat, what they eat and what not. When we say they cannot eat, you know, pigs, this is Sharia law. When they say they have to eat halal meat, this is Sharia law. When they say that they have to go to the mosque on Friday, this is Sharia law. Every aspect of their life is Sharia law. There is big parts of Sharia law that governs killing the infidels and fighting the Jews and the Christians and so forth. And this is all under the umbrella of political Islamic agenda and political Islam. Mm.
You know, Mark, once again, we appreciate what you're sharing with us. And I wanted to go a little bit to some solutions here. But I want you, if you would please, to address our American pastors. And I say that because we have many pastors here in the United States of America who will not speak out against Islam. As a matter of fact, they will continue to teach their congregation that Islam is a religion of peace. And so when I talk about solutions to understanding Islam here in the United States of America, I see a great responsibility on the pulpit of churches across the United States of America. In coming to a solution in dealing with Islam in America, particularly even as it relates to some of the compassion that some liberal Christians are giving over the refugees that are being taken in, I would like for you to speak directly to pastors and say, pastors, this is what we must do to deal with the situation of Islam in America today. Would you please do that?
Absolutely. Number one, the terminology of Islam is a religion of peace is a made-up term. That, do you know who is the very first one that ever said that? History of Islam? President Bush. The very first one in the history of Islam, in the history of Islam that ever said that Islam is a religion of peace is nobody other than our beloved President Bush. Okay? And as a matter of fact, I myself, I'm putting out on my website a challenge of $10,000 for anybody, Muslim or non-Muslim, that can point out to one statement in the Quran or Hadith that points out that and identify Islam as a religion of faith. And till today, nobody ever came up. And this has been going on for 4 years. Okay?
You sound like another fellow we get on from time to time. He's always putting out challenges financially. sounds good to me. Preach it, brother. Go.
Yes. If you find out somebody that can bring that Islam is a religion of peace, you know, I will pay them the money. Here's the thing. When we look at the pastors in America, I can divide them into two. Or actually maybe three. There is pastors who are really very vocal and standing strong on their faith, and those who are not denying the deity of Jesus Christ and who Jesus Christ is, and those I applaud them and I pray for them daily. And there is another group of pastors, the second group, who are confused or afraid to open their mouth, so they stay quiet and try to avoid the subject matter. And there, and those, I pray for them that one day they will never deny Jesus Christ as he told us not to do. The third group is pastors who are already complicit and bending backwards and removing Jesus and the deity and Christianity out of their pulpit and replacing it by a globalist ideas and so forth. And those are complicit and in cahoot with the Muslim Brotherhood, and they are in cahoot with the Islamic Society of North America. And this is not something that I'm claiming they are. It is a well-documented thing that you can find it on the website of Islamic Society of North America, and they are naming all the churches, the church denominations that they already bought into the common word and all the ideas of the Muslim Brotherhood and so forth, and those are the ones who are talking about Islam that equally valid and so forth. And, you know, to name some of those churches, United Church of Christ is one of the number one of them, Episcopal Church, ELCA, and the list goes on with 28 church denominations in America that they already bought into the Islamic Society of North America, and you can see the list on Islamic Society of North America website, and you can also see it on the website called Shoulder to Shoulder Movement, and you will see all the churches, okay? So my message to all the churches is what? Do not deny the deity of Jesus Christ. Do not replace the theology of the Bible of redemption by the blood of Christ, by any kind of worldly, ideologies and so forth. Do not bend backwards for hoping for peace, because peace only comes through Jesus Christ and nobody else. And stop working with the enemy, because the enemy will devour you at the end.
Mark Christian of Global Faith Institute, thank you. Our time has just flown by. I wanted to ask you to close in prayer. We are not going to have time to do that. We will have you back on this program. Ladies and gentlemen, go to globalfaith.org, Mark Christian of Global Faith Institute, and go to our website, standonthegapradio.com, and you can pick up this archive. Until tomorrow, 23 hours from now, ladies and gentlemen, would you stand in the gap for truth where you are? Don't deny the truth.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to Stand in the Gap today with Sam Rohr, Gary Dahl, and David Kistler. Brought to you by the American Pastors Network. Every day on this station, we address the most urgent issues undermining the culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. APN takes seriously the command to be salt and light in this culture. Our mission is to declare truth into the public square, bringing a biblical worldview to the issues of the day. We seek to build a dynamic network of pastors across the nation who hold firmly to the authority of Scripture and boldly preach the whole counsel of God. This ministry is supported through the prayers and financial support of people like you, and we urge you to do all you can to help the American Pastors Network accomplish this mission. To learn more, visit www.americanpastorsnetwork.net and help us with your donation today. Find out how we're impacting the culture and how you can join in the mission. Join us again tomorrow for Stand in the Gap today.
If my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven and I will forgive their sin and heal their land. 2 Chronicles 7:14. WFYL reminds you to pray for America.
Broadcasting live from historic West Norriton Township, this is AM 1180.